Like, I know for Josiah or other officers, they kind of have the, like, it's never going to happen to me. It was the same thing for me. Like, this can't actually be happening. You hear about it, you know it's a possibility, but you never think it's really going to be you in that situation.
Hey guys, don't forget to check out the Street Cop Training Conference, April 23rd through the 28th, 2023 at the Gaylord Opryland Resort and Convention Center. It's going to be a great experience. 5 career-changing days, some of the most profound speakers in the industry. Guest speakers include Rob O'Neill, the guy who killed Bin Laden, Kyle Carpenter, the youngest living Congressional Medal of Honor winner, Fox News host Tommy Lahren, Navy SEAL American war hero Jason Redman, Sheriff David Clark, Sheriff Mark Lamb, and Sheriff Wayne Ivey. You'll also spend time with all of our Street Cop instructors at this event Monday through Friday. We'll have a great lineup of courses in addition to our great speakers. It will be a week that you will not forget. You'll be thankful you came. You don't want to miss out. Check out streetcop.com on how to register. If you're going to use the room code, make sure you book it from Sunday through Friday. That's what the code's good for, and it's about half the price of the regular rate. But those rooms are running out, so make sure you sign up now. We'll see you there. Hey guys, welcome to the Street Cop Training episode. I'm your host, founder and CEO of Street Cop Training. My name is Dennis Bonino, and I have with me today a dear friend of mine's wife. And the reason he became a dear friend of mine is not because of any good reason, even though he's a great guy. It's because he was shot severely and significant in the line of duty, responding to an active shooting call at a gas station. And thought it'd be a good time to bring in not only somebody's wife, but Abby Overton is also somebody who is kind of leading the charge a little bit in our Street Cop Training Wives group for survivors. And she'll elaborate that a little bit further, but she has been a person who's been a driving force in the starting of getting to the families and spouses and siblings and all the people that matter in the background that are often forgotten about when somebody is significantly injured in the line of duty. So, Abby, I'm glad you're here today. And, you know, you're just one of those people who has a very special place in my heart. It's weird how it worked out that way. But I'm glad that you're here with us. And maybe you could tell us a little about how you and Josiah met. And is it not a good story? You're smiling.
It's weird.
Tell me a little bit about, well, fuck, tell us the weird stuff. Tell us who you are, who your husband is, and what brings you here today.
So we actually met in high school. On Twitter.
Did you guys go to the same high school?
No, we went to like high schools that played each other in sports. So we knew each other's high schools, but we didn't go to the same high school. And he slid into my DMs, for lack of a better term. We ended up dating. He's 2 years older than me. So he went away to college. 2 years later, I ended up following him. The rest is history.
That's it. So how long are you guys together? And maybe you could just, because Josiah's not here to discuss the story about what happened. I know you know it in great detail. Josiah's literally one of the most impressive human beings I've ever seen in my life. And if you look at him, you wouldn't think that he's as impressive as he is. But he really is a unique character. I think anybody spends 5 minutes with him realizes how special he really is. So let's go into some of the detail of like what happened to Josiah.
Yeah. So on March 15th, close to midnight, he responded to, it was a roving active shooter who was driving around town, shooting out of his car at first. The guy wrecked out at a gas station, went into the gas station and was shooting people inside there. Josiah and another officer, Officer Walsh, were both right down the road from the gas station. They responded. There was some miscommunication on just the calls on the radio. So when they first showed up, they didn't know that the shooter was still inside. When they showed up, they found a guy outside the gas station who had been shot and started rendering aid to that guy. And not known to them, the guy was still inside. Came up to the window, shot them from inside the gas station. Josiah was able, after he was shot, to run for cover. The other officer Officer Walsh also tried to run for cover, but unfortunately died.
Josiah just wasn't shot and ran for cover. Can we talk about the significance? And let's just take a moment to acknowledge Officer Walsh's sacrifice. I don't want to breeze right past it. It's a very upsetting thing. And I don't want to do him or his family disservice by just breezing past that at the moment. So, you know, I just want him to know that we're doing the work on his behalf, and everybody in the world appreciates his sacrifice responding to a call that night that many people would run from. So it speaks volumes of who he was. And I'm sure that he'll never be forgotten, especially by those whose lives he saved. They don't even know it, but certainly his family and friends. But switching gears back to Josiah, because we're just painting a context of what it was like to be a significant other of somebody who was severely injured. Josiah, now, if I recall correctly, this was a high-powered rifle, right? Like an AK-47?
Yeah.
So 7.62 rifle rounds. How many times did it hit Josiah before he ran?
Three, pretty much.
And pretty significant injuries. Where was he hit?
Yeah, he had one kind of in his shoulder blade on the back. He had one that his vest actually stopped. We don't know how. And then one that grazed his head when he was laying on the ground. It just caught the metal framing of the window and changed direction enough that it just grazed his head. And then he was able to get up off the ground and get his gun out and ran and took cover behind a garbage truck.
What happened from there?
He got on the radio and dispatched that he'd been shot. Other officers arrived. They tried to get him to sit down so they could render aid. He told them to F off, that he was going in to get the guy.
And he was how old at this time? 22, 23 years old?
He would have been probably, I was 23, so he would have been 24, 25. Yeah.
The young guy, not on the job a long time, but a fucking hard charger.
Yeah.
People don't realize, like, Josiah, what does he weigh? About 160 pounds soaking wet.
Yeah.
And he's got the heart of a lion. The dude, when you hear, if you guys haven't heard his episode that he did with us, you should listen to it. He is remarkable. Before he came on, I was told he was remarkable. And now, you know, like, I really love the guy. I love spending time with him. I love seeing him. He's just one of those people that you just can't help but know that he's this, I don't know, innocent looking dude, but he's a man's man. He like looks younger than he is too, so he looks like a boy, but he's a man's man. He's a hell of a dude.
Yeah, he had a lot of fight in him. He talked about how he remembers like videos from when he was in the academy that he kind of reverted back to, where some guy had an adrenaline dump and he's like, I'm not doing that. So he refused to sit down. He was ready to go back in and fight.
What essentially ended up happening? How did they, you know, before he gets rushed off to the hospital, what happened with the active shooter and responding officers?
So when his sergeant arrived, she kind of looked him over and they threw him in a cop car and they got him out of there. Eventually they did breach the gas station, but the shooter had locked himself in one of the back offices and killed himself by that point.
Well, you know, as horrible as the incident is, I'm glad nobody else got hurt from that point forward. So, all right. So Josiah gets rushed to the hospital and they're working on him. Now let's go into your part of this, because again, what we're trying to emphasize is people are not realizing what happens to a spouse. Did you guys ever talk or discuss about if this was going to happen? What would be the plan at all prior to this happening?
Josiah and I hadn't really talked about it, but he had a deal with his best friend in the academy that if something ever happened to him, the best friend came to me and vice versa for his best friend's wife. But it turns out in the actual moment, especially for our situation, it was still active and ongoing. Officers were busy and tied up. No one was coming to get me quickly, at least. I got a phone call from Josiah's cell phone and I answered, just thinking, I don't know, he was checking in, wanted to talk, whatever. But the service was cutting in and out really bad, so I couldn't hear anything, and then the call failed. I didn't think anything of it. I actually checked, like, his Snapchat location, and it said he had been active, like, a half hour ago. And in my mind, I was like, oh, well, nothing bad could happen in a half hour, right? Eventually, a few minutes later, I got another call from just a 417 number, our area code, and it was the officer who drove Josiah to the hospital, calling from a phone in the hospital, and said, Josiah's been shot. I'm here at the hospital with him. We'll send officers to come get you. And I told him no, and I drove myself to the hospital.
So before we go forward,
yeah,
bring us back to that moment. You answer the phone. All he says is, Josiah's been shot. We're sending people to you. They didn't say, like, hey, look, he's okay. He's conscious. He's breathing.
Yeah, so he said his name, which I didn't know him. I'd never met this officer before. And he said, I'm with Josiah. He's been shot. I think he said he's walking and talking, so it's not that bad, or something along the lines of, he told me that he was walking and talking.
What's the feeling you get instantly when you hear those words? What, 'cause it must bring you back immediately.
Surreal. Like, I know for Josiah or other officers, they kind of have the, like, it's never going to happen to me. It was the same thing for me. Like, this can't actually be happening. You hear about it, you know it's a possibility, but you never think it's really going to be you in that situation. I had just fallen asleep on the couch. So in mixture of it being surreal, I was like, had to make sure I wasn't having a bad dream or something, because I couldn't believe it.
So you get, I'm sorry.
No, I was just, and then it was this, I was 23 at the time. No one I knew had been in a situation like this. So I had to figure out my next moves. His parents live 5 hours away. So I didn't know, do I call them when I don't really know anything? Do I wait until I find out more information? It was just a lot for a 23-year-old.
When that happens, what's the immediate feeling? Obviously, you said you felt like this is surreal, but did you feel like, okay, this is my husband, I'm his wife, I love him, I'm getting there immediately? And what did you do? Tell me about, like, walk me through what it was like at your house at that moment.
So we don't have any kids, just me and the dog. And the officer on the phone said that they would send someone to come pick me up. And I said, no, I'm driving myself there now. I'm not waiting. Because, like you said,
you can't wait.
Right.
You can't wait.
I couldn't wait. So I immediately put the dog in the kennel, bawling. I told him I was going to get dad and dad was going to be okay. And then I got in my car and I actually called my mom. I didn't want to call Josiah's mom until I knew more, but I needed someone to keep me calm while I drove, because I knew that it wasn't going to do me any good to wreck on the way to the hospital. So I called my mom, woke her up. I asked her to just keep me calm while I drove. I ran only one red light and I got there safely.
How long did it take you to go from your house to the hospital?
Probably 5 to 10 minutes. Like I said, it was right around midnight, so streets were pretty empty. And we weren't too far away. So it was a fairly quick drive, but felt like forever to get there.
What was the range of emotions you were experiencing in the car on the way there?
Panic, I think, mostly just at the unknown. I didn't know the situation. I didn't know the severity. I just didn't have a lot of information at that point.
So you get to the hospital, you pull right up to the emergency room, or do you park and get out?
So I'm a fairly healthy person. I don't go to the doctor a lot. I didn't know. The only time I'd been to this hospital was on a ride along with Josiah one time. And so when he's in his cop car, he pulled into the ambulance bay. So I tried to pull in the same spot and it was under construction. So I just pulled in the first spot and ran up to these doors that were locked because it was midnight. And a security guard came up to me as I was banging on the door, insisting that someone let me inside. And I said, my husband's an SPD officer. He's been shot. I need to get inside. So this security guard put me in his car to drive me around to the other side of the hospital where the ER was. And on the way around the hospital, he radioed ahead to another security guard and said, I have one of the officer's wives with me. And I started yelling at him. And looking back, I felt so bad because I didn't know this guy. And I was, what do you mean one of them? I had no idea that Officer Walsh had been shot. This poor guy just kept saying, I don't know. I know there's at least two officers. I don't know the situation. I was met at the ER door by another security guard and some grief counselors. And that, like, I can still see it in my mind. They walked up to me and asked which officer I was with, and I told them Overton, and the grief counselor just walked away. Didn't say a word, so I didn't know. I thought that was hopefully a good thing, but I didn't know. So then they put me in this tiny, tiny room by myself and just told me to wait. And that was like the worst. It was probably only 5 minutes, but it felt like an hour just sitting by myself.
Why did they tell you to wait?
I think that Josiah was getting maybe like a CT scan or something. I'm not 100% sure, but they sent his sergeant to talk to me before they took me back there. So I think he was getting some tests done, but they also might have just been going back to check on kind of if it was okay for me to be back there yet. I'm not 100% sure.
And nobody sat with you during that time?
No, not until his sergeant came in to talk to me right before she took me back to him.
Did she stay with you the entire time?
Yeah, pretty much. I think she would maybe leave to go, you know, take phone calls and handle stuff. But she became like our second mom after that incident. She was always at the hospital, always at our house, checking in on us, getting us stuff. She was incredible.
Trying to put myself in your shoes there, sitting, waiting to know what happened to your husband. Like an eternity, it must feel like. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, I went back and my mom was texting me because she knew that he had been shot and she wanted to know more. I went back later and read my text to her, and it was just in a complete panic. She's like, what do you mean they put you in a room? And I was like, I don't know. I'm just in a room by myself. I don't know anything. It was terrible.
Maybe it's a good thing that if somebody is married to somebody in the medical field in a hospital, especially an emergency care or trauma center, to acknowledge that maybe you want to peel somebody away from a desk in a situation like this where there's significant injury, not just because they're a police officer, but in any circumstance like this, and keep somebody company or have some training in place to keep somebody company while they wait their opportunity to see their loved one.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's a big part of the medical professional's obligation is to have a lot of compassion for what people are going through. And I guess they're just as hardened as cops at times. And I don't hold them accountable because I got to be honest with you. Some of the most amazing people in the world are medical professionals. And some of them aren't, right? Just like any other profession as well. But I can't imagine the torture, what that must have been like. I mean, I can't even handle like a birthday surprise. And you're sitting in there, you know, trying to figure out what happened to your husband. Did you think back on the grief counselor at all? Did it ever click to you why they might have had one? Any thoughts at that time?
At that time, no. I was just waiting to figure out more about what was going on. I don't feel like I really processed all of that until later.
Before we go forward, because I have a bigger question at the end of all this, I guess now is a good time to ask this question because we're here to help people. This is one of the questions of probably many that I have for you, but what would you tell somebody who is going to be, or is in your shoes at this moment? Maybe things you could have done better that you might want to tell, like breathing, maybe like panicking is not going to resolve it. Calling my mom was important. Make sure you have somebody you can call that you can trust. maybe waiting to call somebody's parents and let them know, no reason to cause panic just yet. You tell me.
Yeah. So a big thing that I've told even my department was, in reflection, I should not have driven myself. That was not the safest option. So just to have something else in plan, whether that maybe is even asking your neighbor to drive you or not making the phone. I mean, I'm glad that I got the phone call and was able to get there, but I know that driving myself was not the safest thing I could have done. So maybe having someone available who can just go get the officer spouse. That way they're not driving themselves and they're never alone. Was my big thing that I talked to our department about. But I'm just kind of a naturally calm person. So I feel like I probably wasn't, but I feel like I was able to stay pretty calm through most of this, but I wish I had had someone there with me. So if you're able to have someone there with you, I think that that would be best.
So for law enforcement, who's listening to this, make it a top priority if something like this happens, to send a car as fast as humanly possible to the family of the officer injured or whatever it may be. And that should be a top priority dispatch call. Even if you get a call for mutual aid to another agency, even a state agency, whatever it may be, whoever's available, get somebody over there. And on top of that, make sure that that person, whoever is the person bringing that person to where they're significant other or loved one may be, stays with them. You're not to leave. There's no calls for service unless there's some significant violent acts still in progress where you'd have to respond back. You know, we want to make sure that we're there for somebody, and maybe you don't even have to say anything if you don't know what to say, but that's part of the deal. Just being there, maybe just saying, "Hey, can I get you a cup of coffee? Can I get you water?" Right? Whatever it is. What do you need from me? I'm just going to be here for you. I'm just going to sit here. That's it. And being that human being that people need to be with them when they're in the time of complete distress. All right. Yeah. That's really, I mean, this is good stuff. This is what, you know, Ab, when I did this, you know, and just so people know, I have a relationship with Abby. I have a relationship with Josiah. They have my cell phone numbers. We chat. It's not frequent because I'm super friggin' busy, but these are people that are not just picked at random. These are some people who are some of our first recipients of the Street Cop Survivor Awards. Josiah is an amazing, amazing kid. And on top of it, Abby's been very motivated in trying to make sure that what she went through doesn't happen to anybody else. So what better way to do it than explaining it here? So it's very rewarding for me to be on this podcast and be able to give people this piece of advice moving forward. So it's going to help. There's no question about it. And that's exciting for me. What happens next?
So his sergeant came in and she told me, she sat down and she said, "Josiah's been shot in the head." And that's the only thing I remember her saying to me. I love her to death, but that's the only thing I remember. And then I remember her saying, "Are you ready to go see him?" I was like, "Yes, get me back there." So finally I got back to Josiah. They open the door and I just see him still covered in blood, and bless his heart, whatever he's going through, he's just smiling at me. And I know that it was because I was there finally or for my own comfort, but this man's just been shot and he's smiling at me like I just brought him food. And he starts comforting me. You know, "I'm okay. I'm okay." And then I stood next to him, watched them unpack and repack his wound, held his puke bucket. I mean, watched him get high on all the drugs they gave him.
Was he puking?
Just once or twice, I think, after they started pumping him with all the pain medicine. He did throw it, and probably the adrenaline dump at some point. I just remember the Mountain Dew that he had coming back out.
I think that he was, because I know him, I think he was smiling because he was like, "Yeah, they didn't get me, right?" Like, probably, yeah, like, honestly. like, you know, like when you're your mom tells you not to do something and then like you get hurt, be like, ah, but I'm still here, right? You know, like, yeah, what are you gonna do, right? Like I'm kind of this, I know, because that's how I would be as well.
Yeah.
I would hope, you know.
I have a picture of him, I mean, face covered in blood, just the biggest, cheesiest grin on his face. And I think at that point he was a little bit high on pain meds, but it's just a funny picture that he's in a hospital bed covered in blood and one of the biggest smiles you'd ever see on the guy.
I wonder if we can, do you guys ever share that picture?
I mean, I would.
Just make sure it's okay with him, because I think it'd be really cool to make an Instagram post out of that or something like that, and maybe tell the backstory of what happened here with Josiah, because he's such a unique dude. People don't realize, like, if you ever get to meet this dude, he's something else. Like, I'm not just, you know, I don't say about everybody. He is like kind of out of his mind a little bit.
A little bit, yeah.
We tried to eat dinner together when I was in Kansas City, in Lawrence, wherever I was. Oh, so Overland Park. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, we could not get a place together. I think I had to go catch my flight or something. The weather was terrible, I remember correctly. And the place we went to, we just couldn't get a place. I'm like, I'm gonna split out of here, dude. I wanted to get dinner with you, but I'm sure I'll see you guys again, no question about it. Because all the Street Cop survivors are invited back at no cost. Unfortunately, I can't incur everything this time around, but certainly that the admission to the events are always going to be free for Street Cop survivors. And, you know, we'll do something. We'll hang out for sure. I miss him. I honestly do. And I miss you too. But anyway, so he's there, you're holding a puke bucket, Mountain Dew. What else?
So at some point, the officer who called me, I don't know that he left until we got put up in our own room. At some point, that officer and I started looking at Josiah's vest that he'd pulled off, because he had a spot kind of up by his collarbone that looked like he'd been shot there, but we thought maybe that's he had been shot and the vest stopped it. It turned out that was where the bullet in his back tried to exit, was sitting in his chest, because we found his vest and the bullet that his vest stopped was more in like the ribs area. So we were kind of in there trying to piece together what happened. We found the bullet in his vest, which was, I have a picture of, was kind of cool just because it wasn't supposed to happen. And eventually we got wheeled up to a normal room. The hallways were lined with people. That was really surreal.
What does that mean?
Officers, command staff, people who were at the hospital already, nurses, doctors were lining the hallway in the ER as we left the ER room to go up to the normal room that we stayed in for 2 nights.
So you guys get up to at what point do you start calling Josiah's parents?
So actually, this ER room has terrible service, and I think my phone is dead. I think Josiah's sergeant actually called them. I didn't call his mom, which
I just
feel terrible about. But
now, here's another lesson learned, especially for the women out there listening. If you're the wife of a police officer, I don't know why women think 27% is charged. I have no idea. Everything in my house, all the iPads, everything, I charge it nonstop. I try to get everything at 100% as often as I can. Can you tell me why women think 38% is charged?
In my defense, my devices are usually pretty charged, but it was midnight. I'd fallen asleep on the couch. It was the end of the day. I don't know.
But yeah, I mean, yeah, this is the importance of keeping your phone charged. And really, I keep them charged. One time I said to the mother of my children, I said, your phone's dead. And she said, yeah, I know. I go, we don't have a phone here. I'm like, if there's an emergency, what are you going to do? You got to go wait for it to charge. You know, you got to keep it charged. There's nothing else. That's it. The only landline of communication. What are you going to do? So, you know, just. I know I'm breaking your chops a little bit, but obviously it wasn't your fault. But in all reality, that's why I keep stuff charged, because you don't know, right? You don't know what you're going to need and how much power you're going to need anyway.
It's a good lesson learned.
So I know Josiah talked about his parents and what their response was. Maybe you can tell us a little bit more about that. People haven't listened to that episode.
Yeah. So once I got back to the room and was with Josiah, his sergeant kind of offered to call his parents. She asked if I had called him yet, and I said no, and she said she would. So she called Josiah's mom and talked to them. And then so Josiah's youngest brother was in college at the time in Indiana. So they had to wait for him to get to Illinois, where they lived. And then they had to come to Missouri from Illinois. So they didn't make it there until sometime the next day. But they made sure he was okay before they waited and got in the car and drove.
Was he able to talk?
Yeah.
Did he talk to his mom and dad?
I don't know. I mean, I'm sure he did at some point. He wasn't really on the phone in the ER. I don't remember him being on his phone until he got up in his own room. He was in the ER. He was pretty high. He could talk, but he had IA was coming and going, and command staff was coming and going. I don't know that he ever got a moment to touch his phone anyways. And he wasn't making a whole lot of sense. He was trying to talk to people, but was saying words that didn't make sense in the sentence, and I kind of had to help him. Because we were just engaged at that point, and he was like trying to tell people about our wedding and was saying like we have a marriage coming up, and like it was words that he was trying to make sense, and it just wasn't the right words. He had some trauma brain going on.
Yeah, I bet. I'm sure. So what's the rest of the hospital experience look like when his parents get there, and then maybe going home as well? We'll just move right along the timeline.
We always had at least one officer with us at the hospital. It was also like right as COVID kind of kicked off. So we weren't supposed to have a lot of visitors. I think it was like a 2-person limit. So technically me and the officer that were there were the 2 people. So we had to fight to get his family up there at the same time as us. Eventually we got it, and a lot of officers came and went. I couldn't even tell you how many different officers came and visited him while we were there. His parents wanted to stay with him, but he told them no, to go to a hotel that I was going to stay. He was there, I think, 2 nights. And in the second day, the nurses started teaching me how to do wound care. Because once we got to go home twice a day, I had to change his wound and clean it and repack it.
What was that like?
Fascinating. I mean,
it's sarcasm, or do you really think that it was fascinating?
No, I mean, I hated that it hurt him so bad, but I almost went into nursing after I did that because I was fascinated with it.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Still thinking about going into nursing or what?
No. I'm good with teaching, but it was really incredible to, he had the wound in his back tunneled up for inches. So I had to pack gauze into it and to watch it slowly heal from the inside out was really cool to me.
Interesting.
And scary, because I mean, I had no medical experience and I was terrified that I was going to cause an infection or something like that.
So what's life like after all this? As you continue on, as the timeline moves on, his parents obviously came and visited when you guys were home, spent time. They went back home. His brother went back to college. You know, people don't know, as Josiah goes back to work, you know. So let's go into what was the care like? How much time was he home with you? And then I want to hear the feeling you had when he started letting you know he's going back.
So His mom actually had a little bit of medical experience. She worked in like a medical office at a college. So she stayed with us for a couple weeks just to make sure everything was looking okay with the wound care. The rest of his family went home, back to college, like you said. Eventually, his mom left too once we said that we were comfortable changing out the wound and knowing what to look for and everything. As far as Josiah and I, it was hard on our relationship. We fought a lot, angry, a lot of emotions that we weren't really processing. We didn't talk to each other enough. I think that that was something we had to learn probably 6 months to a year after the incident. As terrible as everything that happened was, it was probably really good for our marriage because it opened a whole new line of communication between us that we didn't know we needed. He went back to work, I think, 3 months later.
When did he tell you he was going to go back to work?
The first time in the hospital. He told me, he told everyone, give him 2 weeks and he'd be back. Granted, he couldn't see the hole in his back that we all could see. But he, in the hospital that night, said, "Sarge, give me 2 weeks and I'll be back." So I always knew he was going to go back. Being a cop is his passion. He never, for a moment, had a thought of not going back. But once the hole in his back officially healed, he was cleared. And I think that's probably when the conversations really started, probably around 2 months. He had to do some physical therapy to get strength back and requalify with his gun and stuff like that. So there was still some logistics to cover before he could go back. But probably around 2 months, he started to say, like, it's going to happen soon once the logistics were covered.
What were you thinking?
I was not ready, but I wasn't going to be the one to tell him no. I knew he wanted to get back out there, so it was kind of the, if he's ready, I have to be. I didn't want to be the one to hold him back. I think he knew, too, that I was scared. But again, it was like one of those conversations that neither of us wanted to have. I think that we felt like if we had that conversation, it might slow his process, and neither of us wanted to do that. He was stir crazy at home. There was a lot going on in the world and in our city at that time. A few months after Josiah was shot, another officer was ran over and paralyzed from the waist down. So I think that it was really killing him to have to watch all this stuff going on from home and not be involved in helping his city. So I knew that I had to kind of bite my tongue and just support him as he prepared to go back out there and not be another barrier for him that he was already facing as he was going back.
What's it like now when he leaves for work?
Never easy to watch him drive away. Just because now I know that it can happen to us. You know, he'll tell you he's invincible, but I mean, it could be anyone, anytime. It's easier. I don't think that the wounds are still as fresh, but it's never going to be easy to watch him leave knowing what he's going into.
How do you deal with that?
I talk to people when I need to. People, other spouses or family who get it, but I also just try to keep myself busy. I do stuff at home or work stuff to just keep my mind and body busy, so I'm not just sitting thinking about what he's doing right now.
You guys ever explore the thought of professional therapy? Or do you do that if that's too intrusive of a question? I mean, I'm an open book. So that's, I tend to think that people are open books as well. I know that people aren't. I am. I'm one of those people that I think when I discover something that's very useful, profound, perspective changing, life changing, I want everybody to know about it. I hadn't seen a therapist my entire life, had some very difficult life things to deal with. And again, I say that with the intention of people understanding it. I wasn't suicidal. I'm not bipolar. I was actually looking on advice on how to support other people, to be quite honest with you. And it was interesting to hear like, hey, do you want to address some other shit while you're here? And I'm like, yeah, why not? Right. I'm always trying to improve myself. And you know, the response was like, you can be a better human being. You can have a better life. You can have better quality relationships. When we can start infusing some really, really thoughtful things into how you see, how you treat. And I couldn't be more thankful at the, I don't want to say progress, but at what it's done to help me understand things more. I think nobody's born with the skills of ultimate compassion. I had a friend of mine today. I have every right and every reason in the world to tell him to go fuck himself, right? Every right and every reason. But instead, I haven't talked to the guy in like 7 years. Instead, he reached out to me really out of the blue. And I just expressed a lot of compassion. And I understood why he made some of the choices that he made. And I think he's feeling very guilty, like everybody's judging him based on his behavior. And I said, nobody has the right to judge you. We all have demons. The way you dealt with them was the way you dealt with them. I'm glad that you saw the light and you were able to get back on your feet and get life back together for yourself. We don't have to rub salt in his wounds. He knows what he did. What we need to do to a guy like that is say to him, hey, man, proud of you. I really wrote to him, I'm proud of you. I know it meant the world to him to hear that. Sometimes that's all we have to do. So I guess back to my question is, have you guys sought any kind of things like that?
Yeah, so originally, right after the incident, his department offered free, well, it was the union, I think, offered free counseling services to officers, and they offered it to me as well. I don't remember if it was to all spouses or... but we both tried different therapists, counselors. Neither of us found a right fit for us.
Mm-hmm.
And I think for both of us, it felt kind of impersonal on a level of these counselors and therapists that we were talking to didn't understand the law enforcement side. They couldn't truly relate. So when Josiah found Street Cop and got connected with Jesse Hartnett, someone who actually understood what he'd been through, I just saw like a weight lifted off Josiah. He finally found someone who he could talk to that really understood what he went through and what he'd been going through since on like the mental and emotional side. For him, that was the moment where he realized, like, nothing's wrong with me. What I'm feeling is normal for what I've been through. Because up until that point, he couldn't figure out what was wrong with him. He couldn't figure out why he was angry all the time, why he would, start yelling over nothing or, you know, get agitated over the smallest things. He thought something was wrong with him. And then after finding his people who understood, he's like, oh, this is actually normal after the kind of incident that I've been through. So for us, it wasn't any type of counseling or therapy. It was peer support from people who had been in something similar.
I heard that over and over again as we began to have progression in this space. And, you know, hence almost like, man, this might be a good idea to put this group together. And I actually forgot the Jesse Josiah connection until you said that. And, you know, Jesse Hartnett is a friend of mine. A lot of people don't know who he is. He is the Philadelphia police officer who was ambushed as he was driving down the street. The man ran up to the car and fired 13 rounds. And Jesse was significantly injured. Jesse Hartnett is one of the most kind-hearted, gentle, toughest son of bitches that you'll ever meet in your life. And the guy is a pleasure of a human being to know. And I don't know if they make people like him. I guess they do. He's a unique character, man. I mean, I can't emphasize enough how much I love the guy. Isn't he such a great guy?
Yeah, he is incredible.
And he's really tried to put a lot of his energy and effort into support for others. There was actually a picture. Him and a couple other guys who are in that group and who've been on the podcast, they all have similar injuries. And they went to do hiking together. So it was really cool. He sent me a picture. And of course, I made some off-color joke back, you know, in a funny way. And they were, you know, it was great to see that they had come together through the channels of, I don't know if we had anything to do with it at this company, but at least the camaraderie they felt was unfortunately drawn together by being shot in the line of duty. But it was cool to see that they found each other and they spend a lot of time together. So it's good. It's really, and as unfortunate as the Street Cop Training Survivors Club is on Facebook, I'm glad that it's there, that it's really been a major thing for people in their lives. So, and again, this is not about Dennis Bonino today. This is not about, oh, I thought of this. No. I'm so thankful. And I like, sometimes I forget like the work that we do and why it's so important. You know, Abby, I'm constantly in the mix of bullshit. Like when you do things like the things that I'm doing, trying to make the world a better place, not everybody appreciates it. But even in a difficult time, which I've kind of gotten used to, I hear something like that and I remind myself is, if they only knew, right? If they only knew what it meant to another human being for this thing to be what it is. But
yeah, I have to thank you and Street Cop for everything as far as the family side of it. I know that myself personally, I hit some of my darkest days. I felt very alone and isolated, like I didn't really have anyone to talk to. And I refused to go to Josiah with it because in my mind, he was battling his own demons and he didn't need me adding to it. I had tried eventually as I kind of start, I've hit a point that I had to talk to Josiah, just because of how low of a place I got to. And he told me like, you need to find someone to talk to. And eventually I tried to reach out to like national police wives groups. And I was trying so hard to take this bad place that I had been in and use it for good. Cause I knew I never wanted another spouse or family member to hit that low that I did. And I knew what I wanted to do. I just didn't have an outlet for it. And then like a miracle, Josiah came on your podcast and towards the end, you started talking about setting up the Street Cop Survivor Club. And it was exactly what I wanted, but for injured officers. And so as soon as I got done listening to Josiah's podcast, I messaged you and said, if you ever, you know, want to extend this to the family side, please let me know because I would love to be involved. And immediately you responded with your phone number and you're like, we're going to work on this. And that was incredible to me because I had tried to reach out to so many different groups and was getting no replies or replies that kind of fell through. Nothing ever came from it. So to have that immediate response and action that we just started working on it immediately was a gift to me. it gave me purpose and it gave me an outlet to offer support to other family members.
I don't do those things, just so we're clear, for moments like this. I just do those things because that's who I am. And I don't feel like I deserve any recognition for anything. I'm just a good person. And if I think I can help with something, I think it's important, obviously, which very much is. But I also when we created the Survivors Club, I'm like, guys, I can't help you run it. I can be an advisor to you. I can't sit here and make this my next project. I just can't. But I will support you. And, you know, they're always like, oh, can we use this? I'm like, guys, you can use anything you want. You guys can come here and take over half my office. I don't care what you do. Whatever resource I have, I just can't sit there and continue to, you know, every single day, God, you're going to have to be a little self-sufficient. So, and you were, you know, you took the ball. Tell us about what you've done.
So in our group, it's a lot smaller than the officers group, which I expected, but the purpose isn't to be as big as possible. It's just to provide support. So our group is literally just there. We have some Zoom meetings because we're across the U.S. I mean, we're not all in the same area. We have Zoom meetings where we just check in with each other. We get advice for how are you handling this? Did you have to go through this with work comp or with your marriage or whatever it may be? I try the connections that I've made. I try to just reach out to the family members that are in the group every so often, just to check in, especially around like anniversaries of incidents, and just being a person for people to talk to, because I know that that was the main thing I needed in that time. And I didn't really have, so I just try to be that person for anyone else that I can. And if it's someone that I don't feel like I'm good for them to talk to, I try to connect them with someone who might be better.
Before I ask you to give more details about the group and where they can find it, I just want to say this. As you're talking, I hear this saying in my head that sometimes it's hard to understand, but it's a perspective shift, and it's life happens for us, not to us. And you are a wonderful human being and selfless in every sense of the word and just genuine and pure as gold. And I guess that you were chosen because God needed somebody, because he knew that you were strong enough to handle this. So as bad as it was to go through it, in some weird way, there was a blessing in disguise, because it did trigger this movement that you've started. So I think you just deserve acknowledgement for that. I'm sure that you know in your heart what it means to people. And I know that you don't do it for any other reason than the fact that it needs to be done, and you can do it just like me. Tell us about where they can find the group if they're aware of a family or a spouse who may be in peril or distress.
Yeah, we are on Facebook, Street Cop Family of Survivors Club. You can request to join. There's just some questions that you have to answer, and then I can read your answers and approve. Usually when we have someone new join, once I approve you, I'll immediately send you a message or add you from my personal Facebook so that you can always contact me from there.
Is there a contact you want people to have for you? You don't have to give an email address or anything like that. You don't have to give that out. If you prefer them just to message you through Facebook, that's perfectly fine. And before you answer that, also tell me about the people who are in the group and the relationships you guys have formed and developed.
So like I said, we have people in the group from all over the US. It's a lot of, once we got started, people who knew other people that were in similar situations. I have personally, if I see a news article or something like that for an officer being injured in the line of duty, I will try to reach out to the department or someone. I mean, like, there was an incident in Illinois, which is where I'm from. So through a friend of a friend, I was able to get in contact with the officer's wife. The officer of the, or the wife of the officer who was ran over that I mentioned earlier, she has a very big outreach. After her husband was injured, they had a Facebook group that just grew really quickly. So she has a lot of people that she has been able to kind of refer to us. And then other than that, it's just, it's mostly spouses, but it's open to any family members, because these incidents affect a lot of people that maybe we don't think about. So parents, siblings, sometimes it's best friends, you never know who's affected by these incidents. But I have people that I've met through this group that I will text just for life advice or just to see how they're doing or have a good holiday or marriage advice because they've been married for 10 times longer than me. It's just, we're just friends now and we're just there for each other for anything that we need, whether it's law enforcement related or just life related.
That is profound and wonderful. And it's awesome. And I'm so proud of you. It's so fucking awesome. It's so cool. Doing great work, man. I love it. I knew having you come on here was going to be good. You are a very special person and the law enforcement community needs to know, Abby Overton is doing some really good work for the community.
Thank you.
Well, I just want to say thank you for taking the time out of your day to come on the podcast and share some of this stuff. I don't know if there's anything that we missed prior to this, any questions that I missed, but if there isn't, I wish you a happy holidays. And please don't think because I'm absent or I'm not constantly in contact that I'm not thinking of you guys. You know, I am, believe me, you're always have a place in my heart and I appreciate you guys so much. You and Josiah.
Thank you. The only thing I would want to add is that from all of this, I hope that departments and wives groups of departments take the initiative to have some type of peer support already in place before it's needed. Because our department, and I hold no grudges, I'm not on here to talk bad about them, but they have more in place now. But I wish that it didn't have to take our incident or us feeling kind of on our own to have that stuff set up. So I hope that me on here talking and kind of having outreach will help departments to know to have things in place before it's needed for peer support and mental health support.
And it's not that hard to set up, just to have it in place. And maybe I'll even toss in, that I've talked about in the past, a little bit of a battle plan for notifications. Mm-hmm. And for transport, have that stuff set up and just really before it happens, because you just never know when it's going to happen.
Yeah. And also to have that prepared for 6 months after a year on the anniversary, just being prepared for how hard some of those milestones can be. And even to just check in and be a mental health support for people who were affected by the incident as the milestones roll around.
Takes a little more effort to give a shit and care, right? But when you're done doing it, you feel so good about it, yeah. You know? And people appreciate it so much more than you think they do. It's just people, you can't quantify what it feels like. And, you know, you're just reminded at times of like what your purpose is and what you can do for other human beings. I'm going to say this one last thing, because I remember watching a YouTube video of it was a life after death thing. And a guy goes and he gets sent back, right? So he goes... He, according to him, meets the Lord. And the Lord says, you haven't done enough for fellow human beings. He says to him, what have you done for your fellow man? And he's in his, you could actually find this on YouTube somewhere. And he says, I don't have an answer for that. He said, well, you're not done doing the work. You're going back. What I want you to do is my work. And now the guy goes around and speaks with people who are terminally ill and tells them about what he experienced and where they're headed. And that's the work he does. He doesn't get paid to do it. He gets paid because he is doing work for his fellow man. And when I say that, I mean mankind, a woman as well. But it's a real interesting thing to think about, that that maybe on your judgment day, they're going to ask you, what did you do? And the work that you're doing is really, really wonderful. And it was great having you here. And tell Josiah I said, Merry Christmas.
Thank you for having me.
I'll see you later. If you need me, reach out anytime. You know that.
Thanks.
Guys, if you're in an area where you're trying to get to our classes, but we're not close to you, fret not. We actually have on-demand training at StreetCop.com. You can take that course online right now, and then you could attend that training in the future at no additional cost. You can redeem your voucher, so you get two for the price of one. We don't want to deny you the ability to take this training now, especially knowing that it can keep you safe, at a very minimum, putting bad guys in jail where they belong, and at the maximum, going home to your family. Check out StreetCop.com for that offer.